ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 16 टेक्स्ट नंबर 25। This chapter is entitled King Chitraketu Meets the Lord. The verse is in the prose. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Mahanubhavaya Mahavibhutipataye Sakala Satvata Parivridha Nikara Karakamala Kudamalopalita Charanaravinda Yugala Parama Parameshtina Namaste. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Transcendental Lord, who are situated in the topmost planet of the spiritual world, your two lotus feet are always massaged by a multitude of the best devotees with their lotus bud hands. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete in six opulences. You are the Supreme Person mentioned in the Purusha Shukta prayers. You are the most perfect, self-realized master of all mystic power. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. It is said that the absolute truth is one, but is manifested in different features as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. The previous verses describe the Brahman and Paramatma feature of the Absolute Truth. Now this prayer is offered in Bhakti Yoga to the Absolute Supreme Person. The words used in this regard are Sakala Satvata Paribhridha. The word Satvata means devotees and Sakala means altogether. The devotees who also have lotus feet serve the lotus feet of the Lord with their lotus hands. The devotees may sometimes not be competent to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, the Lord is addressed as Parama Parameshtin. He is the Supreme Person. Yet, He is very kind to the devotees. No one is competent to serve the Lord. But even if a devotee is not competent, the merciful Lord accepts the humble attempt of the devotee. Om again. O Transcendental Lord, who are situated in the topmost planet of the spiritual world, your two lotus feet are always massaged by multitude of the best devotees with their lotus bud hands. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete in six opulences. You are the Supreme Person mentioned in the Purusha Shukta prayers. You are the most perfect, self-realized master of all mystic power. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Shripad Narad Muni is teaching the prayers to Chitraketu Maharaj so that he can please the Supreme Lord Anantadev. And we see the story. Srila Prabhupada will explain in the future purports also, that in the very first place, Chitraketu Maharaj was not supposed to have a son. All his endeavor, it was an over endeavor, marrying so many wives and still not learning the lesson. But because at the same time he was the follower of the Vedic culture, a pious king, had faith in the Supreme Person, but somehow that he could not realize that this is not the arrangement of the Lord, I should give up this endeavor. He had one pain of not having a son, but then he had to experience another pain of having a son, losing him so badly, his pain simply increased. So therefore, when there is an infatuation to get some object of the senses, either the sense object is living one or the sense object is made of a matter, the infatuation is the same. And because of that infatuation, one's intelligence does not work. in case of Chitraketu Maharaj. You know, sometimes people may say, how is it possible that he married 1 crore? He had 1 crore wives. But the fact is, it shows the nature of infatuation. How strongly he was desiring to have something which he was not supposed to have. Just like one of our devotees, the brahmachari, you know, his parents were trying him to get married. And he was quite open for that. And his mother tried about 300 kundalis. And none of the kundalis were working. So both mother and son decided, I think you are not made for marriage. Become a brahmachari. So when something is like that, that your nature or your destiny is something else and desiring strongly, that is called as infatuation. Infatuation of lust, which is the most powerful one. Dhyayato vishayan pumsa sangaste supajayate. When there is an infatuation of lust, such a person becomes very unpredictable. Wisdom is lost. There is no question of having any memory. And then, not only that, you cannot trust such people. Their activities are very superficial. Like Kamsa, what was Kamsa's infatuation? Kamsa's infatuation was just to live in this world. When he was told by that Akashvani, the unembodied voice spoke from the sky, that the son of Devaki and Vasudev will be the cause of your death. Dying is ultimately is a reality in this world. That is the only reality of this material world, that one has to die. So he was told that you are going to die in the hands of Krishna. Like that Gauranga was mentioning, when Diti came to know that she made the mistake of invoking wrong kinds of souls. But what was her satisfaction? That at least these sons would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They will not be cursed or angered by the great devotees of the Lord. But here Kamsa had such a benediction that he would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could have contemplated so positively. But then, he was so attached to live in this world, the infatuation to live in this world was so great in Kamsa, nothing could make him understand. All the instructions, all the experiences, the power of Krishna. He tried so hard, not one time. Many, many times he tried to kill Krishna. But he was not able to do that. So therefore, Shastras, when someone is infatuated for lust, for greed, for anger, and then their behavior after that infatuation, unpredictable behavior, sometime because if they feel that my desires, objects are getting fulfilled, and those who are helping them to fulfill their desired object, which they feel, they will reward them unreasonably. And at the same time, if they feel that somebody else is obstructing in getting their desired object, then they punish them unreasonably. Reward and punishment, both are unreasonable. Like when Kamsa, when Vasudeva came, after the first son was born, he was so truthful, he came and offered the son to Kamsa. And Kamsa was so happy. He said, okay, anyway, this is not the son who is going to kill me. So he is not obstructing. So he said, you take him back. He is not the son who is going to kill me. And Kamsa was so happy with Vasudev, because he had such a truthful personality. But what was Vasudev's mindset? I said, you can't trust him. Because his uncontrolled senses, he is unpredictable. So that infatuation naturally causes unpredictable behavior. And unfortunately, this material world also, as this whole chapter, Prabhupada will explain in the future verses, that material world is so arranged, just like to be happy in this world, especially when the marriages take place. Arranged marriage means that where both the parties, the parents, parties come together and see the nature of girl and the boy. Their kundalis have to match. Because they know two false egos are coming together. And they have to live for the rest of their life. So they have to find, you know, the probabilities of matching. And still after all that good match, you know, many times the marriage, the household life is as good as Kurukshetra. But here in material world, even though the match is totally, the combination is very bad, material world, which is a temporary place, and the living entity who is eternal, and is trying to have a match, trying to find some even combination to be in this world happily. And that infatuation to live in this world happily, what does it do? It causes unpredictable behavior. Loss of memory. The memory is lost. We are discussing this. That how is that a living entity who is originally with Krishna can leave this plate, leave that spiritual world, always enjoying with Krishna? He has given up that connection with Krishna. And that is not the problem with the Lord. It is the problem of the living entity. Because of his desire, that infatuation makes him forget his identity as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore he comes to this world, and because of that infatuation, his memory is lost. And because his memory is lost, his so-called connection with God in this world is very superficial. In fact, the concept of spirituality, the concept of worshipping God, God is not the ultimate goal. God is the road. You know, he's a highway. You know, if you use God, but the focus is on attaining the goal through God. And because the focus is attaining something through God, then what does it do? The connection with God is very, very superficial. Because the connection with God is very superficial, whenever there is circumstantial difficulties, like, you know, we were in Muktinath, and you have to fly back to come to the main place where the roads are working. Otherwise, there are no roads between one station to another station, or one airport to another airport. Pokhara is the town, and from there you fly to another town to walk up to Muktinath. There are no roads. The vehicles don't go there. There are no trains. And if you don't get flights, then you are stuck up. Then you have to walk down. 2 days, 3 days. Very difficult. So devotees are stuck. And some families, you know, they were stuck for 3 days. And when there are some kind of expectation that the plane will come, you know, the family members were all taking out some kunku, applying to each other, and then they were like so desperate praying. What was the prayer? Prayer was that the flight should land safely to their place, and when they fly, they should land safely to another place. So the concept of worship of God is so superficial that use God to fulfill your desire. So where is the question of remembering God all the time? You are always remembering the desired object, that this is what I want to attain. And God is simply a matter of instrument. If He can help me, that is good. And if it doesn't help me, somebody else can help me. Therefore Srila Prabhupada explains in the first canto of the Bhagavad that what people used to pray for God in the previous time for fulfilling their material desires are being fulfilled by the modern world. Therefore, naturally, you don't find people coming to the temples. Because the whole reason for coming to the temple was not serving God. The whole reason for coming to the temple was fulfilling their desires through God. God was an instrument who could fulfill their material desires. Therefore, naturally, the connection with God is very superficial. But here Srila Prabhupada explains very beautifully that even though we may not be competent to serve Krishna, a living entity may not be competent, but Krishna fulfilling His promise to His devotees, Krishna's service to His devotees is not superficial, it is substantial. Even though we may render devotional service superficially, but when Krishna reciprocates the desires of the living entity, especially the desires of pure devotional service, that is very substantial. He takes our devotion, which is very superficial, very seriously. And that is the only hope for the fallen conditioned soul of this age of Kali. Kali Yuga is the age of much superficiality. Somebody was quoting, Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj was quoting one time in Bhagavatam class. He said, in Kali Yuga, you don't find religion becoming less. People don't go less to, you know, the melas, the Kumbh Mela, the Magh Mela, or Balaji, Tirupati Balaji. Wherever they know, these places are the places where all of your sinful activities will be exhausted within one bath. One darshan of Balaji will fetch you as much as money as Balaji has. Then naturally there is a greater line. When we hear the story of Ananta, who was the disciple of Ramanuja, when he was serving Balaji, nobody was there. He and his wife. And Lord Himself came to help so that they can take care of his garden. Why? Because he had not gone there, you know, just a flying visit. I'm coming, I'll take your darshan, but I'll come back to my place where I can enjoy by your results. So people go there. So he was saying, religion superficially will not reduce in this age of Kali. Rather, it will simply increase. There will be greater and greater number of people visiting the holy place. Vrindavan, we see. What was Vrindavan when six Goswamis went there? Nobody was living there. When you would go to Vrindavan, you know, they would live under the tree. The first Bhajan Kutir was constructed by Raghunath Das Goswami on the order of Chaitanya, on the order of Sanatan Goswami. No Bhajan Kutir was there. And that too because Sanatan Goswami felt that Raghunath Das Goswami is causing disturbance to Radha and Krishna. That they had to serve Raghunath Das Goswami. But now we see Vrindavan has become a concrete jungle. Everywhere houses. People living the life of luxury in Vrindavan, it doesn't go well with it. And therefore there are many number of dacoits also. Vrindavan is not place for the dacoits. And same time Vrindavan is not the place for enjoying your senses. Only those who want to practice a complete dedicated life, a simple life, they can go to Vrindavan. Otherwise Krishna creates in the form of, you know, land mafia, dacoits coming and taking all your money. So here, we see the material world, because of these two combination, wanting to live here, wanting to find happiness here, and approaching God, therefore naturally our devotion is very, very superficial. And therefore, Krishna, seeing the superficiality of our devotion, what is His nature? His nature does not change. Rather, His nature, as Prabhupada calls here, Krishna is the, His realization is the highest realization. Why? Because He is Paramatma. And then seeing the age of Kali, which is so superficial, He has to go beyond His own promise. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam satayo bhajamiham. This doesn't work in this age of Kali. If Krishna is to reward according to our devotion, He cannot reward because there is nothing to reward, because there is no devotion. According to our devotion, if Krishna has to reward, It will not work. Nobody will make any progress. So therefore, this is such a very promising purport. Krishna goes beyond that. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami explains that how when in the presence of the gopis, Krishna said, he could not maintain his own promise of Yatha Mam Prapadyante. As you approach to me, I reward accordingly. It is not possible. If it is a question of our right, I perform this much of devotional service. In the first canto, Prabhupada explains that it is not our own dexterity and our own endeavor which gives us the mercy of the Lord. He said, our endeavor will not fetch a result which we are supposed to get if you want to be a pure devotees of the Lord. It is Krishna's kindness. He goes beyond what we could offer and offers the result. And Kali Yuga, that is the only reason we were discussing recently, that you know, Balramji and Lakshman, even as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their behavior is very unpredictable. Krishna, very thoughtful, very philosophical. Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, we see Lord Ram, you know, reciting philosophy to his parents and to many people, and then Lord Krishna teaching Bhagavad Gita. But Lakshman or Balaram, you know, they act very, very whimsically, and that is also transcendental ecstasy. When Lakshman saw the chariot of Bharat coming to Dandakaranya forest, without even thinking, he concluded that Bharat has come to destroy Ram. And he became so coppery-eyed, very angry. He said, today he could not see the connection between those army with himself. They were his army only. They were Ram's army. But what was he saying? That I am going to destroy all of them. Today, the Dandakaranya forest will be drenched with the blood of the army of Dasharatha Maharaj. And similarly, Balramji also, making friendship with those people who are not supposed to be befriended. Duryodhan. Just imagine, in the peacemaking conference when they had, all the Pandavas had gathered, discussing about this. Balramji, you know, right in the presence of everybody, everyone was concluding how the Kauravas are wrong, so unreasonable. And Balramji suddenly gets up and starts chastising Yudhishthira Maharaj. He said, it was your responsibility. You are at fault. You went to gamble with them. So Krishna has to stop. Okay, now you keep quiet now. But that same behavior of Lord Balaram, it is so transcendental. When he comes as Nityananda Prabhu, because of that unpredictable behavior, what does it do? It gives us mercy. Nityananda Prabhu, because he's so unpredictable, no reason and logic. If he had to think, then he will not go out to preach. Because nobody is made to become a devotee. Lord Chaitanya ordered, go and preach. And he himself was very, very discreet. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, going to very qualified people. Rup Sanatan, even with Prakashananda Saraswati, such a self-controlled personality, having 60,000 disciples, never indulging in sense gratification. But because he was not devotee of Krishna, Mahaprabhu would not go close to him. But because of the repeated request of that Maharashtrian Brahmin, Lord Chaitanya decided, okay, let me save. But his devotee Nityananda Prabhu, so unpredictable, and because of that unpredictable behavior, Nityananda Prabhu would go everywhere. Even he would jump and try to give his mercy to crocodiles. What to speak of giving mercy to the people who are like crocodiles? They would also get his mercy. So that is Krishna's nature. That is the nature of Krishna's devotees. That even though we are not competent to serve Krishna, but mere imitation of serving the Lord, in fact, sadhana bhakti, the process of sadhana, of chanting, hearing, worshipping the deity, is nothing but mere imitation. It is just like a child watching his father, who is a doctor, you know, trying to see the patient, give the medicine. The real doctor, when he tests the medicine, inspects the patient, It is a reality. He can diagnose the disease, he can give the treatment, and the treatment works. But the son also imitates just like the father. He doesn't know how does the stethoscope works. He doesn't know how the heartbeat works. But mere imitation, what does it do? It gives pleasure in the heart of the father. It gives the pleasure to the patient also. Even though he may not take the medicine from the son, but it gives the pleasure. Why? Because the son is imitating very nicely. Therefore, as a sadhaka's, a conditioned soul, devotional service is foreign to the conditioned soul, but simply imitating the activities of your devotees, of chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Worshipping the deities, hearing Bhagavatam, speaking Bhagavatam, which is also another imitation for people like us. But that act is so pleasing to the Lord and His pure devotees, they are satisfied, they give the reward. That is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is what the Bhagavatam is all about. Parikshit Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj and other great devotees, you know, they present that how their devotion is so superficial. They are not connected to devotional service. They are connected to those who are connected to devotional service. But still, the Lord is very merciful. Like in the Mahabharata we read, when Arjuna heard that his son was killed by Jayadrath was responsible for killing Abhimanyu. Now Arjuna became very angry. Prabhupada always, especially in the first canto, he glorifies the Pandavas, the typical pure devotees Pandavas. That you have to understand what pure devotee means. It's the typical pure devotees, the Pandavas. Their whole life was completely surrendered to Krishna. So when the news was reached to Arjun that Jayadrath had killed Abhimanyu, Arjuna took the vow that within sunset tomorrow, I am going to kill Jayadrath. Such a nice description is there. It is so nicely depicted in the Mahabharata, this whole scene of Arjuna taking vow of killing Jayadrath. And further vow was, if I don't kill before sunset, Arjuna talks about hundreds of different activities which are irreligious and what are the reaction for those irreligious activities. He said, let all those reaction befall upon me if I don't fulfill this promise. That is one thing. That this reaction could lead a very bad life in the future. Actually, that was worse than jumping into the fire. We only give importance to he taking that vow that he wanted to kill himself. But other reaction what he wanted, they are more fearful to hear. Because if Arjuna said, if I do this wrongly, and according to Manusamhita, this is the reaction. And let me suffer that reaction. At least 5 to 10 pages are there, which Arjuna speaks about, that let this reaction come to me. Let this reaction come to me. He names all those reactions. Like as a Kshatriya, if a Kshatriya does not fulfill the promise of someone, then whatever reaction is supposed to come, let that reaction come. If I don't, kill Jayadrath. And then he concludes his vow by saying that if I don't kill Jayadrath tomorrow evening till sunset, then let me jump into the fire. That was the conclusion. So he took that promise. And then on the other side, the Kaurava army, they got to know this. Jayadrath, he told Duryodhan, Duryodhan, bye bye, I am going now back to my country. And I am not going to fight. I don't care that I will be condemned. He packed everything and he was about to leave. Jayadrath is the brother-in-law of Duryodhan. And now Duryodhan gave him a false promise. He said, come on, you stay here. It's such a nice thing that if we can protect you and we guarantee that we will protect you, we will not be killed. It was not that Duryodhan wanted to protect Jayadrath. He wanted to protect Jayadrath so that Arjuna can be killed. Arjuna can jump into the fire. He was not interested in, giving that shelter to Jayadrath. His interest was, if Jayadrath is protected, Arjuna will jump in the fire, and if Arjuna jumps into the fire, Yudhishthira will jump into the fire, Bhima will jump into the fire, and Krishna will be so despondent by losing his devotee, he will just leave everything and then I can be monarch again. That was the mentality of Duryodhan. So he promised, you don't worry, we have so many warriors, they will protect you. He gave the false promise to Jayadrath, and some other Jayadrath, he actually believed in the word of Duryodhan. He stayed back. But here, when Krishna heard the promise of Arjuna, the Lord, even though he promises in the Shastra, but how did he react? It is explained, Krishna, he said, why did you take this promise? Did you ask me while taking the promise? He told Arjun, just see the impracticalities. It is very impractical that you could kill within evening such a vast army of the Kauravas. Still, many Akshayani Sainya was surviving. He said, it is not possible for you to do it. And Arjuna said, we take promise and you fulfill. He said, it is not my problem, it is your problem. And then, that night, Arjuna went to sleep very peacefully. There was no problem for Arjuna. He slept very peacefully, having nice dreams. But Mahabharata explains, Krishna was changing sides. He was not able to sleep. Just see, Arjuna's promise, in one sense from Krishna's point of view, was not substantial, not reasonable, not logical. It was a great wrong on the part of Arjuna, out of circumstantial reason, very impulsive. He took that promise that within evening I will kill. But he had no means to fulfill that promise. That is the incompetency of a devotee. He had no means to fulfill it. But Krishna, taking the promise of Arjuna seriously, he could not sleep whole night, changing his sides. And then he was thinking, how could Arjuna fulfill this promise? What should I do? I have taken promise of not raising my weapons, not lifting my weapon. But in case tomorrow, if Arjuna cannot fulfill his promise, if Arjuna jumps into the fire, how can I live? The Lord eternally lives. There is no question of death to the Supreme Lord. But just see, Lord feels his living is dependent on his devotees. Just like sometimes we hear the stories, the demons, they don't have their life in their body. They're so attached. They don't keep their life in their body. Then some wise prince goes to the demon, some other he gets the information. If you cross seven seas, seven islands, seven mountains, there is a parrot, and if you break the neck of that parrot, I will die. And that parrot is protected by so many things. So Krishna's life similarly is dependent on his devotees. So Krishna says that how can I live without you, Arjuna, in his dream, in his rolling back and forth. And then the Lord decided, if Arjuna dies, he said, tomorrow if something happens to Arjuna, even though I promised that I will not raise my weapon, not only I will not raise weapons, not only I will kill Jayadrath, but tomorrow entire planet will be wiped out. I'll finish off all the Kshatriyas, all the Kauravas. And Lord decided that if Arjuna cannot kill Jayadrath, I will ask tomorrow morning Daruka, to keep all my weapons ready. My Kamodiki bow, my Sudarshan Chakra, my Saranga Dhanu, everything should be there on the chariot. When I blow my conch on the battlefield while driving the chariot of Arjuna, if I see that Arjuna is not able to do it, I'll blow my conch in Rishabha note. There are different notes. Like Radhanand Maharaj is telling that story of one devotee he met in Janakpur. He met one devotee, his name was Raghunandan. He had a very peculiar style of meditating on the Lord. He was a Ram's devotee. And every morning, he would take his conch and contemplate on different pastimes of Lord Ram, the birth of Lord Ram. When he would meditate on the birth of Lord Ram, he would blow his conch in a very unique way. And you could know, if you would stay with him for a few days, then you could know now he is contemplating on the birth of Lord Ram. And then when he would contemplate on the pastimes of the Lord, where the Lord Ramchandra is going to the forest, then his conch would be very mild one, very painful one. He would express that pain through his conch. In this way, this devotee would blow conch for more than 1 hour. That was his chanting Hare Krishna, blowing conch. All different pastimes, the conch would be blown different way. Most of us, we don't know how to blow conch also, when we offer aarti. So Krishna, you know, he would tell Daruka tomorrow morning, that when I blow my conch in Rishabha note, different notes are there to blow the conch, then Daruka has to come on the battlefield. Then I will finish off everybody. So thinking, the Lord went to sleep. Mahabharata explained. And he had a peaceful night. He had a nice sleep. Why? Because he recognized how to protect Arjuna, how to fulfill the promises of his devotee. So that is the point. That Arjuna, he took that vow impulsively. Of course, the original plan was to serve Krishna, but here, because his son was killed, he became angry and he took that vow, but he had no clue how he would fulfill his desires. So Krishna has to figure out. So therefore, here we see that even the devotee is incompetent in fulfilling his promises, his vratas, but the Lord comes to the aid of his devotee and tries to fulfill. And that is the point Srila Prabhupada is mentioning. That Chitraketu Maharaj had no intention to perform pure devotional service. His only intention was to have a son. But somehow that he came in contact with the pure devotees of the Lord, Angira Muni, Narad Muni. They give him very powerful experience of this world. And they gave him the knowledge of detachment from this world. And Narad Muni is giving him the mantra. Within 7 days, just imagine, very clearly mentioned, that within 7 days you will see Ananta Dev, Lord Ananta. And now he is going to chant those mantras under the guidance of Narad Muni. And by chanting those mantras, he will have the darshan of Lord Ananta Dev. And then within that 7 days, the transformation will take place. That Chitraketu Maharaj will become a great pure devotee. So therefore in Bhakti Yoga, when we practice devotional service as sadhakas, we should see that we should not allow different kinds of infatuations. Because once the infatuation comes, then nobody can tell anything. And even if you tell, apparently one may accept the advice. But the mind is infatuated, you will act anyway in a very unreasonable way. Therefore the Shastras only advise. Advice is given not to the fools. Prabhupada always quoted that Upadeshai Murkanam Prakopaya Kalpate. He said if you instruct a fool, one who has lost his sense of discrimination, then he cannot understand. It is not possible. It is a waste of the person who is giving advice. As it was said, that an intelligent person learns more from the fool when a fool talks than a fool learns from the intelligent person when the intelligent person speaks. Why? Because when a fool speaks to an intelligent person, he can understand he is a fool. When an intelligent person speaks to a fool cannot understand that he is an intelligent person. So it is a waste of the intelligent person's time of speaking to the fool. And therefore what does the Shastra do? When one does not hear good advice, when the Shastra advice are not heard, then the Shastra is taken. Then the weapons are taken. That you don't hear words properly, then you require punishment. What is that punishment? That is awarded by the Kshatriya king. That is awarded by the state. That is awarded by, in the case of devotees, that bad experience of going through, even though being advised by devotees, the instructions given by the devotees, if one does not listen, that experience which a devotee goes through. Very interestingly, we see, we take advice from devotees when we don't need advice actually. We go to devotees asking advice when we actually don't need advice. We can practice our spiritual life independently. But when we need advice, when the devotee on his own comes to give that advice is seen to be interfering in our life. Then we take our life in our own hands. It's very interesting, psychology of a human being. When we actually need advice, need to hear properly, we don't take. You know, we feel it's an interference and we take our life within our own hands. And therefore, Angira Muni, knowing Chitraketu Maharaj, even though he needs advice, but is not willing to take, he did not bring. Angira Muni had the power to create a false son and give that false son to Chitraketu Maharaj for some time. And Chitraketu Maharaj can experience false happiness. And then, when the son is lost, then he brought Narad Muni. And because Chitraketu Maharaj was trained in respecting the sadhus, even though those advice were not very, very soothing in the beginning, again Narad Muni had to create some magic, reviving his son. And that's also an illusory thing. Because if he had to revive the son, why he did not keep him for a long time? It is just like a magician making money. He makes the money, he creates the money, but after the show is over, he begs money. Give me more money. Of course, Narad Muni is not like a magician. But again, it's a false thing. Just to give knowledge to Chitraketu Maharaj. And Chitraketu Maharaj heard. And his understanding was completely changed. He became a pure devotee of the Lord. And that pure devotion which he practiced for Lord Anantadev, that became substantial. He was not looking for any reward. And therefore, what is the reward of pure devotional service? The reward of pure devotional service is explained by Prithu Maharaj in the fourth canto. When four Kumaras came to Prithu Maharaj and they instructed Prithu Maharaj, they bestowed their mercy to Prithu Maharaj, and Prithu Maharaj in turn, he is just thanking these four Kumaras and offering his pranams to them, and he says, the endeavor of a devotee or endeavor of an ordinary devotee to repay back the task or the work done by the great devotees, the benefit offered by the great devotees to ordinary devotees, Prithu Maharaj says, it is not possible to fulfill. You can't repay them. The mere act of repaying the charity received from a pure devotee is a laughing stock. It makes a laughing stock. Vinoda Patram. So therefore, a pure devotee is told by ordinary devotee, while putting all his efforts, physically he may put all his efforts, trying to repay what he has received from the spiritual master, but the consciousness is that tushyantu abhadra karuna swa, swa kritena nityam. That you be satisfied by your own activities. And what is that own activity of a pure devotee? Prabhupada explains, that activity which will satisfy that pure devotee is saving the fallen conditioned soul. Similarly, Lord Krishna told the gopis, and that is the highest reward in devotional service, which we have to learn to live with. You know, we desire some material result for our devotional service. So Krishna told the gopis, be satisfied with your own devotional service. Because Krishna, when he is fulfilling the desires of his incompetent devotees with an overwhelming heart, like Krishna is fulfilling the promise of Arjuna, and what to speak of his competent devotees? Of course, Arjuna is also competent. When a devotee renders some service directly to the Lord, which is completely satisfying to Krishna, which is exclusive devotional service, unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service, we can imagine where is the question for the Lord to repay. He is going beyond what the incompetent devotees can offer, and what to speak of competent. And therefore, what does the Lord say? In his helpless condition, the Lord says, be satisfied with your own devotional service. I have nothing to offer. There is nothing for me to offer you. Be satisfied with your own devotional service. So therefore, satisfaction in devotional service itself is a reward. If there is no satisfaction while rendering devotional service, there is something wrong in our understanding of devotional service. Because the process either practiced like a Raganuga Bhakta or practiced like Sadhaka Bhakta, it has to give satisfaction. Only if our understanding is wrong, our expectations are wrong, then only that will not give satisfaction. Otherwise, simply by rendering devotional service, day after day, year after year, doing the same activities, hearing the same Bhagavat, hearing the same Katha under the guidance of devotees, not only it has to give satisfaction, but rather that satisfaction has to keep on increasing. It has to become more and more. And in this way, when we are satisfied with devotional service, then the matching of being in this world becomes a foreign to a conditioned soul. And he looks forward like Chitraketu Maharaj when he became Vritrasur. What does he say? Oh my Lord, I am feeling the pangs of your separation. Virahaya Kangshe, he said, I cannot anymore stand this separation. Therefore, O Indra, please come and kill me. Where we have the infatuation to live in this world, where Vritrasur, he cannot stand even one breath being in this mundane world. What does he pray? He prays that, just Indra, come and kill me. Your killing will be a great benediction to me, so that I can go back to the spiritual world. Therefore, this purport of Srila Prabhupada, or so many purports, is always a hope-giving purport. Bhakti Yoga, unlike the other process, is the process which gives hope to devotees, even the most insignificant devotees. But only thing is that he has to continue practicing the process, he has to continue associating with devotees, he has to continue hearing as much as possible, but never give up that. And then this rewarding, what is the reward? At our stage, the reward in our stage is that hope-giving promises of the Lord. That you keep on doing this. Even little bit of devotional service will eventually give rise to this kind of consciousness. One was aspiring, over-endeavoring to have a son where he was not supposed to have. Such person getting such a pure devotional service. Just see the contrast. And we are all eligible. Not because of our qualification, but because Krishna's unreasonable mercy, his causeless mercy upon the fallen condition soul. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srinath Prabhu, any comments?
Haribol. So in the Mahabharata you had mentioned, so before the war started, the two commander-in-chiefs got together and laid down the terms and conditions of war. That was the Kshatriya principle. And it was agreed that Marathi will fight Marathi, Dasarathi will fight Dasarathi, and so on, equal. So that rule was broken by the Kauravas when this Abhimanyu, the son of Arjun, was single. And they were multiple. And all those fellows, including Jayadatta, and Duryodhan, etc., they were all Marathis. So they broke the rule first. So this question came as to how Krishna would kill you know, how Arjun would kill now this Jayadratha. So the question, Krishna, you are right, that was correct, that he could not rest and so on. And he agreed to take up arms just to protect his own devotee. But then it is also stated by the acharyas that Krishna is spontaneous. And he realized that this mother nature is under my control. In Mahabharati says, mother nature is under my control. So he could make an appearance as if there was already a sunset, which the Kauravas started celebrating. And he, amongst the cheaters, I am the greatest cheat, because they are already cheated. So he said, then I can show them what is real cheating, including the sun. Let them try that cheating. And he made a false sunset. Arjun was totally disappointed. He felt, now it's finished, now I have got into soup. Now this happened many, many times to Arjun. Gave the Brahman sons, you know, in Dwarka, same thing. So he never learned his lesson.
That's his habit.
Habit. That's the habit of a devotee. Yeah. That's what Krishna is proving. Actually, Arjun is a great devotee. But he's just, for our sake, he's saying that you guys do this all the time, you know, and each time Krishna has to pull you out. Then he, Krishna, arranged that false sunset. But even then, Arjun didn't realize that this was a false sunset. And nobody could realize, only Krishna could realize. But because Arjun was a pure devotee of the Lord, he followed the instruction of the Lord. That is the point. We don't follow even the instructions of the Lord, from within or without, as Guru Maharaj. And Krishna said, no, no, this was not a real sunset. The sunset is, time is next, afterwards. You go and now, the fact they are celebrating, you can kill it.
Yeah.
So the point here is that Arjun followed the instruction of Krishna and understood that whatever be the repercussion, never mind. Of course, internally he might have thought it's better than jumping in the fire. But he did follow the instruction. That is one. And the second thing was Lakshman, that is same as
Nityanand Prabhu.
Nityanand Prabhu, very kind to us. Once I heard Radhanath Maharaj speak at Mayapur when we were at that place. No, not Ekchakra. Ekchakra is his birthplace. But we are talking about where Nityanand Prabhu was hit on the head. Chand Kazi, not Chand Kazi, this Jagai Madai, that place. So, Radhanath Maharaj said at that time, Nityanand Prabhu remembered, you said, no, that he does something whimsically and all that. But one thing great he remembered. He told the Lord that if we are to now, he stopped him from killing Jagai Madai with the chakra. Then we'll have to finish everybody. What I am supporting your statement, that none of us in this material world are truly devotees. Otherwise, where was Nityanand Prabhu's statement?
Yeah, right.
That's everybody, the proof. He is the guru. He is the Adi Guru of all gurus.
All of us, we need Shastra only, not Shastra only, not Shastra. We need Sudarshan Chakra only. Hare Krishna. Karantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Hush. Comment.
Hare Krishna. The question was that if we seek the advice of an advanced devotee or a pure devotee of the Lord, and then if we do not follow it seriously, does it constitute an offense, like the third offense against the holy name? So what is the gravity in different situations when we try to take advice and then some or the other, maybe willingly or unwillingly, we do not follow that advice.
Of course, you follow, but you are talking about others. Therefore, sometimes we feel, if I ask question and if I don't follow, that is an offense. So therefore, better don't ask. But that is another offense. When we try to avoid offense, we end up in the web of offenses only. But if we are sincere and then, take that step, that extra step, knowing that asking some specific instructions or asking advice means it may be very difficult to execute. But at least we know what I am supposed to do as a right thing. Again, a devotee is so, Krishna and his devotees are so wonderful. They will give us advice if we seek their advice. When we are in troubled times, that is the time our false ego, it becomes very big and it covers our intelligence. But some other, if we take the pin of humility and bust that false ego and approach the spiritual master and the advanced devotees and take their guidance, it may be difficult to execute, but at least we know what is the right action. And eventually when we experience the trouble of not following their advice, and that time the devotee may not be around us to, but at least we know he had told us. So let me execute at least now. Better, late than never. So therefore, even though in our heart of the heart, we may feel that, I know I can't execute this order. But still one should approach and seek. And that is a lesser offense than concluding, okay, I should not go because if I ask him, then that will be an offense. Because if the knowledge is not given, what do we know? When we go through that experience, then we will take another route, which is like Rupa Goswami explains, that falling into that, prarabdha, papa, bija, kutam, that vicious cycle will continue endlessly. Therefore, Prabhupada is so, very clear instruction is given, what one has to do, in what condition. We may not execute, we may not be able to execute because of our condition, but at least we know what is the ideal situation. But if we don't attempt, it's like sometimes students, they don't prepare properly. And they decide, okay, better not to appear for the exam. But that is not a good thing because you don't know how tough it is. You don't understand how less you have prepared. If you attempt, you know you are going to fail, but at least you know how miserably you are prepared. But if you don't attempt, you know that you have failed, but you will never know how less you are prepared. So there will be an effort on the side of the student. So therefore, sometimes we see those who try and make an effort, they may fail, but they realize, I lack this much. When they go for the next attempt, and then they actually can do well because they know where do they fall short. So therefore, it's very important that we make that decision. That when we need advice, not that when we don't need, just armchair discussion and then, neither I take it seriously. But when I actually need that advice, and that is the time we feel it's such a hard pill to swallow. But anyway, we have to do it. It may be a hard pill, but when we do it, if not now, but in the future, we can do it. That is the grace of the devotee. He doesn't take it as an offense that you didn't follow this instruction. He hopes that at least sometime he will follow. If not now, in the future, after some time. A devotee is a greater. Therefore, a pure devotee's compassion, he is not like a judge or a police officer. He gives the instruction and immediately expects he execute it. Otherwise, he will get punishment. Krishna was willing to speak once again the whole Bhagavad Gita. Just imagine such a complex philosophy. When you give one very complex lecture, some speaking about material nature, is very exhausting to the brain. Krishna is a person, he is a supreme person. He has a supreme sentiments. And Arjuna going through all that lamentation. But the Lord is willing to speak it once again. Because of his compassion. And Arjuna, And very nice, Mahabharata explained when the battle was over, they were walking. Just, you know, pleasure trip. Arjuna said, can you speak Bhagavad Gita once again? He said, no, this is not the time. Neither I can speak, nor you can hear. Because you are not in that condition. That desperation is not there. Because Krishna didn't take out his, you know, palm top and see the notes. Okay, I have the notes, let me speak. Mahabharata explained, he said, this is not the... He said, I have forgotten. Because your lamentation caused his compassion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, when Sanatana Goswami said, can you explain to me the definition of Atmaram verse? He said, you had spoken that to Sarvam Bhattacharya. Mahaprabhu said, I don't know. He said, I don't remember. I spoke because I was associating with a madman like Sarvam Bhattacharya. Because of his madness, I became mad. And because of madness, something was coming out. Maybe in your association, something will come out. And Mahaprabhu started speaking the Atmaram verse. As Naji Prabhu said, Krishna is very spontaneous. He doesn't have files or prepared notes. What to speak to what devotees. Their lamentation, their, you know, their shelter, their surrender, makes Lord take different kinds of decisions. Therefore, bhakti is very unique. It is different to you. It's different to somebody else. Like, you know, Maharaj is mentioning about that devotee was blowing the conch. That now for him, it's a unique way to serve Krishna. If I start blowing the conch, that's an imitation. That's simply a disturbance to all the devotees and to the Lord also. So therefore, Krishna interacts with a devotee in a very, very unique way. Can't be imitated. So the Lord reacted like that. If I say, you know, I take promise, you fulfill. Arjuna can say that because he had a unique relationship. We are expected to fulfill the promise what we take. Follow the four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds, associate with devotees, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, this is my... Prabhuji, you agree that we should seek guidance? We have to seek guidance, and even if we can't follow that instruction, but we have no... But we can't say that, okay, anyway, I'm not going to follow the instruction, why ask this? Being very compassionate to Guru and devotees, they don't want to waste their time. No, they want us to waste their time, so that they can see us practicing devotional service in a very serious way. So I'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki.